The following episode of Faux Hop is rated MA. It contains alternating hosts, a rotating roster of guests, and mild coarse language. Faux Hop advises that it is not suitable for anyone under the age of 15, or anyone who came here looking for one of those highbrow NPR-type podcasts. Minors must be accompanied by a parent or guardian. This is John Deek speaking.
Hello and welcome to Faux Hop. I'm Charlie Clawson, and my guest this week, for the second time tonight, because we just recorded an episode and we listened back and the file was completely corrupted. It sounded like two Daleks having a conversation and I have absolutely no idea what went wrong. He's very kindly agreed to stick around to do another show. We may get back to the first one if I can work out how to fix that file, but it was incredibly familiar territory for anyone who's ever listened to any shows on this network. It's Ty Hara, actor, writer, director, creator of the web series Colorblind. Welcome back.
Hi, everyone. How are you, Charlie? What the fuck are you doing to me?
Oh, I'm so sorry. I don't know. This happens occasionally. Like, it was such a good episode. We had such a great time. We talked about lots of great stuff. Had some laughs. Got serious, got deep.
We could say anything. They'll never know now.
Yeah. Part of me, we did go on a rant at one point. Well, you went on a rant about how much you hate cat videos.
No, don't start. Don't start the episode off pulling me into my darkest place.
Well, no, I'm just thinking that maybe someone's looking out for you. Like, maybe.
Right.
Like, it was a good thing. Like, maybe that episode comes out. You go on this rant about how much you hate cat videos,
okay,
and then like the tide turns against you, like suddenly you're getting harassed on social media. People love cats and cat videos are like, Ty Hara hates cat videos.
Look, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but sometimes these things happen for a reason.
Yes.
But I do just want to give my point of view for anyone that hasn't heard before. I love animals, big fan of dogs, big fan of cats. I was mentioning something in the realm of we were talking about cat videos. I think I can't really remember, but anyway, let's move on. How's doing another 1 hour podcast?
Let's see if we get to the hour. Yeah. Be very optimistic.
2 hours. Come on, let's break a record. Didn't we break a record with the last one? We were going for about 6 hours there, weren't we?
Oh my God, it's so frustrating. You would think too that like 12 years into this, I'd be better at it. I mean, for the last few years, I've been so kind of like meticulous about the prep and I'm always running the backup. But I don't know. I got a bit distracted and I got someone in the studio for the first time in like ages. And so I just got a bit lazy and I didn't want to back up.
Ty's here. Fuck it. Whatever. His episode doesn't matter.
I know. That's why we're doing it again, because it was such a good episode. I feel terrible.
Actually, you know, the crazy thing is I was sitting here. Charlie's got a camera set up. There's 17 screens. A bit of an exaggeration. Yeah,
it looks like the Batcave.
Yeah, it's the Batcave with a couple of mics and a soundboard that looks like Charlie could be going out to DJ in Byron tonight as well.
Yeah.
And I was sitting here going, how do you get onto all this stuff? Like, how do you even learn how to use it? And he's like, nah, it's simple. It's not too hard. Next minute.
Yeah, it falls to shit. Well, again, anyone who's listened to Toe Fop knows we've lost episodes. We've lost like incredible episodes that will never be heard by anyone. You know, the best episode we ever did was a live show that was, that was lost forever.
Oh no.
But this was something new. Like every now and then, technology throws up something new. And it was weird too, because ordinarily I can sort of like know what went wrong. But this to me just felt like.
Yeah. Well, we were going. No, we were going pretty.
Slander anyone? I did slander Mr. X.
I know. Yeah. And you brought up Perrottet at some point.
I did. Yeah, we got political.
We got very political. Some Trump got dropped. But no, it must have been. There was some strong content in there.
Well, the question is now, do we repeat the conversations we had, hoping that we can find something? You've had like some time to think about the stuff we've discussed. Do you have a better take on all the things we talked about?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm happy. I'm just happy to be here. I'm happy to have a bed. I'm happy to have a roof over my head. And this is part of the deal.
Ty's currently staying in our spare room. He's very like a good son. He's come up to help his parents out with the floods. Mm-hmm. The house got a foot of water in there?
It did, yeah. Yeah, through the bottom. But a lot of people got hit a lot harder. Definitely the folks lost some sentimental things as well. But if you see the state of other places around here like Lismore and Mullumbimby and, you know, all the way down the coast, it's really devastating.
Well, for you, it was like particularly hard because you actually lost contact with them. You asked me to go around and do a wellness check because the last thing you heard from them, and I'm not trying to make light of this, but it's like the water was rising and then phones go out.
The next footage I see was on the news just sliding past the house, the helicopter overhead, and all I could see was a house inundated with water. It was really scary. It was surreal. My sister's overseas in the UK. She felt helpless. It's a different time zone. Deep down, you want to hope that your folks are all good. And you know, the casualties and like the fatalities have been quite low, all things considered. But it's still so scary. And I think with all these things, it really hits home. When it is your home,
yeah,
you know, more 100%. Than anything.
I mean, I did see like someone posted something about like it shouldn't have to happen for you,
yeah,
for you to care about it, which is, I get the sentiment of it, but when it does happen to you, like,
yeah,
and because you know, I've been really lucky, and you know, it's where we live is elevated, and so we haven't been affected by the floods too badly, but everywhere around us has been affected, and it's crazy. I don't think I've actually ever lived through something like this before. I've definitely had no experience with floods, like bushfires. You know, I've sort of had some, you know, close contact with bushfires, but this is different, and it's so hard to kind of process too, because I was saying to someone, I did a radio interview today where they're asking about it. And I said, in a lot of ways, like with a bushfire, you know, stuff gets destroyed and it's kind of gone.
Yeah.
And then the cleanup is just about rebuilding. But with a flood, it's kind of like two disasters, because the flood happens, everything gets fucking destroyed, and then it's all just still there. And it weighs twice as much because it's fucking waterlogged.
And things seemingly look fine as well from the outside. Like there's mud and there's debris, but still lots of houses look like they're intact and structures are fine, but they've been ripped through, you know, through the like water levels up to the roof, people having to go on the roof of two-story Queenslanders. It's just, it's unimaginable. It's terrifying.
It is. I mean, it is unimaginable. And that's the thing. Like I've actually been, you know, to houses that were underwater, and these are houses where the floorboards are 12 meters off the ground and the water was still 2 meters above that. And it's, like to visualize or even try and understand what that must be like, it's almost too hard to comprehend. Like I think maybe our brains, as a self-protection, to guard, like they just shut that down because it's almost too horrible.
There's only so much you can process as well, you know. And the thing that gets me the most is that yes, we've lost certain things that are sentimental, but the house is still intact and the folks are okay. You know, they're safe. But you see people that their whole lives have been upturned in one day, everything.
Yeah.
And it makes you take stock of how lucky you are, right?
Well, don't worry. I think Peter Dutton started a GoFundMe, so.
Yeah, I donated to that.
Should be fine. Taken care of.
Yeah, Voldemort, you can't.
All right, now we're back into fantastic. That's all I want. We can stop the show there. I just need to drag it. You can come in, boys. I've got the LNP police outside the door.
Oh.
But how have you been, man? Like, it's actually been a long time since we've been in the same room. We were talking last night, and it's weird because I guess with like COVID and stuff, you sort of forget. Like, you just don't socialize, and certainly now that I don't live in the city anymore, like, you know, you just don't socialize with your friends like you used to. Like,
everyone really upped and left when COVID hit. You guys all just found your fucking greener pastures and got right out of Sydney.
Is that what it feels like though? Does it sort of feel
a little bit? Yeah, there was a big exodus of friends and family from Sydney. But it's also just been a strange period, I think, wherever you are, you know, everyone's trying to navigate what that new world is like and how we kind of fit into it. But the last 2 years has been amazing, scary, all the things. Like, we had a baby, as you know.
Yeah.
Feli got pregnant and then the pandemic hit and we're like, oh, fucking great. Cool. We have no work and a baby on the way and this could kill. It was terrifying. It was so terrifying. But then once things kind of, I wouldn't say settled, but, you know, once there was a little bit more clarity and Australia locked down and I guess we felt safer over here, it was actually kind of amazing. Like selfishly, it was kind
once of the options are taken off the table. Like, you know, oh, should I be here? Should I be in the States? You know, should I be doing this? Should I be doing that? We found it was the same thing. It was like, oh, yeah, it actually is like takes a bit of anxiety away because it's like you're not constantly working out where you should be, what should I be doing, second-guessing yourself. It's like, well, I don't have an option to be doing anything else. We'll just stay right here.
Yeah, yeah, which you do so much of the time when you're an artist, right? You're always trying to go, where should I be? Where should I base myself that's going to give me the best opportunity? And
have you found that place yet? Because I still don't know where it is.
I have no idea.
Is there some golden?
I'm hoping place it's in the front room of your house. Yeah, that's going to really be my my launching pad.
Well, don't fucking get too comfortable because we'll create something amazing, then I'll lose it. It'll be a corrupted file or some shit.
Yeah, that's where someone walks in and goes, "Ty, your whole family's dead." No, that's really grim. I'm sorry.
We did this podcast for people who are familiar with TOEFOP. They'll know what I'm talking about. Superpod. So it was a one-off live show. It was the first time we'd done a live TOEFOP at the Melbourne Comedy Festival, and two American comedians, Dave Anthony and Greg Berendt, you know, good friends of ours. But they had another podcast. It was like our sister podcast. It was like the TOEFOP of America, and they snuck over to Australia, and so we surprised this audience by bringing them on stage. And we did this amazing show, and it was like my first real time being live on stage doing comedy, and it was just like one of those nights where like everything went amazing. Like it was just the timing, the chemistry, the jokes all landed. It was just brilliant. The audience was having a great time. It was so great. And then we like came off stage and we're like high-fiving each other and stuff. And then like even the next day, just buzzing about like how fucking great was that? Yeah. Like that was just a once in a lifetime, you know, and the amazing thing is like we've got it all like recorded and, you know, and so and then we get a phone call from Melbourne Comedy Festival and they're like, look, something happened with the recording. The memory card crashed and we didn't have a backup and so we don't have a recording of it.
Oh, no.
And it was like we just went from elation. We actually were out to dinner the next night, almost like celebrating the victory.
This is going to break the internet. Yeah.
Yeah, we thought it was like this kind of, you know, we've changed the face of comedy. It was a fucking podcast. Like, you know, just like check yourselves. But Dave Anthony hadn't heard the news yet. He was doing some stand-up. He was doing his show. And so when we got the news that we'd lost it, there was just the three of us. And then we're like, oh, you know what we should do is we should record another podcast tonight where we tell Dave live on air. And that can be the show. Like we've got to make something out of all this loss, which was, I mean, it was funny because like Dave is prone to kind of fly off the handle. And it was just like 30 seconds of silence as he just was like, processing how the fuck they could have lost it. And then the anger came, which was pretty amazing. But it did sort of become this thing where we were able to then, it became part of the mythology. It's like, you got to be there, man. Like, I think there is I actually think there's a few bootlegs online. You can find them, like on YouTube and stuff. Someone recorded on their phone. Thank God.
Little moments. Kind of.
No, like the actual show, the whole show. Amazing. But it's like shit quality. It's recorded through someone's iPhone on their lap in the back row or something that. But it was one of those things where it's like, oh, I guess you can. Like you often hear about, you know, often the best art is made when shit goes wrong. Like Jaws, for instance, you know, that shark didn't work and it kept breaking down. And so Steven Spielberg had to think around that. And so the reason that film is so suspenseful is because he doesn't show the shark.
You never see it.
And it's all about playing off the character's reactions and the anticipation of the scare and all that kind of stuff. I'm not saying Superpod was the Jaws of podcast.
I think you are.
But I do think there is a kind of like a nimbleness to being able to roll with that shit. Like you often hear the South Park guys, it's the same thing. Is like, you know, they're equal opportunity offenders and they'll have a team of lawyers saying to them, well, you can't say that. You can't say that. And they're like, well, you know, what can we say? And it's like, can we say Tom Cruise is gay? No. Can we say he's a homosexual? No. Can we say Tom Cruise is stuck in a closet? Yes. You can say that. And so then that's what it becomes.
How many times have you had it happened to you in your career where you've shot something, you've completed a scene, and then come back to find out that it wasn't recorded?
Are you talking about podcasting?
No, like in acting, in podcasting, like how many times? Obviously, that happened to you guys.
I don't think it's ever happened. I mean, generally, I work with professionals.
It's not
podcast related.
I feel like it's happened to me a lot. Oh, really? Yeah, yeah.
Where you've done a take and I went in
to help out Alex Snow.
Yeah.
And another one of our friends. They were doing like a little kind of creative group where they were trying to shoot things all the time, and he had this skit, and he said, "Oh, can you come in and we'll just throw banter around and be a little bit improvised or whatever it is." And we did. I think it must have been going on, like, it was pretty close to you. It was about a 20-minute take, and we finished, and they were like, "That's it. That's the one. We got it. That's going to change. That's it. That's going to change everything." And the camera guy, I won't say his name, just kind of went, "Oh, yeah, sorry. No, it wasn't. Yeah,
it wasn't." I didn't press record.
No joke.
Really?
I was like, "You've got to be fucking kidding me."
Years ago, and again, we won't name him because he's a good mate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I'm going to bring up the same story
where we lost the memory card.
I fucking remember it, yeah.
And the thing was, like, because we caught up with you guys, you'd spent all day filming.
Yeah.
And we won't name names.
No. Nah.
And
you know who
and
you are.
Yeah, had a really good day. And so we met you guys for drinks after you'd been filming.
Yeah.
And then drinks turned into a few more drinks.
Yeah.
And then it was a full-blown party.
Full-blown.
And then it went all night. And then the next morning, it's like, "Where's the memory card that we shot that thing on?"
Devastating.
And it was gone.
Yeah. And who would have thought
something that is like smaller than the size of like your thumb, like your thumbnail would disappear.
Yeah. We've semi kind of named him. He still has nightmares about that. He triple backs up now.
Bad.
Yeah.
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 Well, we just recorded a podcast in which I did not back up, and I'm sitting here with like 15 devices that I just have to press a button on one, and we would have had like backup copies.
But it's always the one when you don't, right? It's all But I remember that one because we did have a really, really big night after that. We really partied for what we'd shot.
I mean, it could have been anywhere, like any. Bizarre. I mean, think about like...
Could have been in the cab.
How big, in the cab. It could have been in the backyard, in the bathtub, on the roof of the house. Like, it was a big night.
God, I love that house. I still have nostalgic memories about that. We're talking about nostalgia before.
Did I tell you that all right, to fill listeners in. So, Ty and I met doing Home and Away. And so, we had a very tight-knit group of friends. And Jem and I were living at this house in Randwick that was kind of like... It's where we'd all go because Sydney's expensive. Not many people have houses, but we had a house. We had this house that should have been condemned. It was like falling apart, but it was super cheap rent and it was a really good part of town. And we had like a backyard and stuff like that. So whenever there was a party or, you know, we needed to go back to someone's house, it was always come back to ours. Cool neighbors. We had, you know, it was just like the perfect setup.
Even when you guys weren't holding parties, you'd let people come back and
party. If people needed to go somewhere, like, the keys under the mat. Yeah. And it was a great place, but eventually the owner sold it, and it needed to be sold. Like, it was filled with mold and falling apart, and the toilet was outside the house.
That's
remember
right.
that? Like, there's things you put up with in Sydney, like that you would not put up with in any other city. Like,
would you do that now as a parent? Come on, honey, you gotta get a toilet trading outside.
In the middle of winter, you've got to go outside and use the toilet. It's not in the main part of the house. So the owner sold the house and it needed to be ripped down. And so these builders bought it and they did that thing where they pretty much, you know, they tore down 70% of it, rebuilt it, put a second story on it and flipped it.
Mm.
And I was always very curious because, you know, we'd had so many great memories in that house when it was a shit box. And one day Jem and I were walking past and we saw a woman walking in. And so we sort of walked past and she saw us looking and we just started talking and we said, "Hey, look, you know, we used to live in that house." And she was like, "Oh, come in. It's like, "Oh, wow. Okay, cool." And so we went in and it was so weird. It's almost like, I imagine if you saw like an ex who, like, when you were dating, you know, maybe she didn't take great care of herself. You know, she's great fun, but, you know, but now you see her and it's like, Jesus Christ, you got a personal trainer and you have got some veneers and
You've really turned yourself around here, yeah.
It was incredible, but it had none of that. Like, it didn't feel like cozy. That house was like, it was a good party house because it was kind of like, I think because it was shit, you didn't feel bad about like, spilling drinks on the floor or just crashing
anywhere you wanted. So it lost its character. That's devastating.
Yeah, yeah. It just kind of became like a sort of one of those, you know, one of those many Sydney like multi-million dollar homes that just was like all modern, but it didn't really have any. Well, you know, that house was horrible, but at the same time, it was really like, it was really cozy and
welcoming. It was the best. It was the best. I still remember sitting around the table and
I think you came to live there for a bit, right? When you and Fel were homeless for about two weeks?
We did, yeah. We seemed
to be. We had a few people come
to
live there.
That's a running thing for us to be homeless, isn't it?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Or just to come and live with you guys when we can, whenever I can, any chance.
That's right.
Are you guys, you got that spare room on
You still around?
They have a daughter now, not a dog. upgraded there.
That's right.
I love that house so much. But those parties, those days, like we were talking about reminiscing before, I look back now and I'm like, oh my God, they were so much fun. Like at the time, we all had so much fun, but you really look back at different periods in your life and realize how lucky you are and were to have those people around you. Yeah.
It's also too, like, I think that it's very rare as an adult that you kind of make new friends, especially if you go into a line of work where it's fairly, like, it stays constant, you know? So if you have like an office job or a job where it's just like the same people, whereas, you know, when you are an actor, I guess, is like you're sort of working from gig to gig. It's like being a musician or a comedian or whatever. Like, yeah. And so you tend to kind of periodically when you have a job is like make a whole new group of friends. Now, you know, sometimes you'll work on a job where you don't make any friends, you know, like it's not a great job.
Yeah.
We just, I felt like that we had a pretty good, I always say to people, it was like we had a good year level.
Yeah.
It was like going to uni where everyone in year level was kind of cool. And it's like, oh, we got on. And it was just like a disproportionately, you know, just good amount of people that I liked hanging out with who are sort of still friends now. But that doesn't happen very often. Like I've worked on other shows since and, you know, I've sort of made friends. But those kind of sort of like, I think it's also too the contact hours. We were in each other's pockets for so long.
Totally. We saw each other for 46 weeks of the year. Every week.
Yeah, you want to get along, right?
yeah. You're going to be my friend. It's funny you're talking about being an actor and going from job to job and not really having kind of any clear linear path in that way. Because I see my neighbors all the time, like in our apartment block, and I think they're constantly just like, what the fuck do you do? Yeah. And they're like, oh, you got some work coming up. I'm like, yeah, I'm going on this day. And they're like, so how'd the work? I'm like, yeah, it was great.
My neighbors here thought I was a personal trainer because every time they're seeing me, because I like to go to the like gym first thing in the morning or if I'm taking Iona out.
This is
like,
a weird flex, I think, here.
It's not nothing to do with my physique. It's just to do with the fact that I would put on exercise gear. I'm like one of those mums in active wear.
Yeah.
Like first thing in the morning, it's like, well, I'm going to go to the gym at some point this morning, whether it's like before breakfast, after breakfast, wherever, or if I'm going to take Iona to the park, I'm going to get sweaty. So I'll just put on like, you know, a singlet and shorts or whatever.
I'm the same, yeah.
But people don't see me working. They see me just walking around town in my exercise gear.
So did you offer them some free classes or something?
Well, the funny thing was-
Pulled out your men's health mag.
My mate next door, there's a tennis club down the road and he just moved, like they just moved here about a year ago and he wants to play tennis, but he's got no one to play tennis with.
Mm.
And so his wife is like, oh, that guy, Charlie, next door, he'll definitely, I mean, you see him, he's always an exercise gear. He's like a personal trainer or something. Yeah. So he asked me, he's like, hey, do you want to play tennis? And I'm like, mate, I don't play tennis. Like, I've picked up a racket maybe like three times my entire life.
You shattered him. He's just trying to do the friendly neighbor thing, make a connection. You're dressed like Nadal. This guy's got it. You're always in the cutoff.
It's false advertising.
It is false advertising.
It's like you see a guy in like a leather jacket and jeans, long shaggy hair, like as a musician. It's like, no, can't play guitar at all.
I was going to say, let's go for a ride on the motorbike. But no, it's... It's definitely something I do as well. I always rock around the house in I guess it is kind of active wear. But what's happened to me is that I get roped in now to all the gardening as well. So
what do you mean roped into all the gardening?
Well, there's a person in our building who she runs the gardens now for everyone. And and I'm always
Is that official?
Yeah, no, it's official. Okay. Yeah, it's an official title. Head gardener.
Head gardener. She's the HG.
Yeah. But because I'm always in just like whatever clothes, and I'm not doing much around the house. I think now I'm part of the official gardening team.
Yeah. Well, you do have the time.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, that's like in between minding, you know, raising and protecting your child.
Yeah. It's thanks for just shitting on my career there. No, I definitely do have the time. But look, I actually enjoy getting into the garden. We've got the herb garden going on now. I see you guys have some nice herbs going on up here.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We do. I actually, the one thing that I have, when you stayed here, so Gem and I, we got stuck in the Gold Coast for a few months last year. So Ty and his lovely wife, Feli, stayed in our house for a bit. And they left it in immaculate condition. Like, I swear to God, when we came back, I was expecting it to, not that you guys had left a mess, but it just would be, you know, it's a house that's been locked up for the majority of the time. So it'd be like damp. And so, you guys must have scrubbed like up and down the walls with a toothbrush. It was immaculate.
Yeah, we did.
And the garden was immaculate and like had been weeded and like things had been like you'd done, it was incredible. But you set a standard that I cannot maintain. Like in the Northern Rivers, because it's so hot and wet all the time, shit grows here like it's on steroids. Oh. And the weeds are my number one enemy. Like I will weed the entire house, like the entire, like all, both paths, the front garden, the back garden.
Back and in within 5 days.
Yeah, it's back. And so I was saying to Jem, like, I'm fucking sick of this weeding shit. Like, and I don't want to get the chemicals. I want to pull them up by the roots, like do the proper thing.
Yeah.
But I'm old and my back hurts and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so Jem and I had this big argument because I'm like, we've got all these friends, we've got kids. And when I was a kid, that was the way you made pocket money, was you'd weed the garden. Mum would give you like 5 cents for like a weed. You'd, you know, bring in like, you know.
Wow, child weeds. Labor. You're really putting it out there, okay?
Yeah, so you've got the same reaction Jem had. So I was like, why don't we just call my mate VK? I'll see if he can, he's got one boy is 10 and one boy is 8. And I'll get them to come around and weed the garden. Jem's like, you can't do that. I said, well, I'll just shoot him a text and see if the boys are busy. And she's like, don't do that. Like, that's really presumptuous and rude and you don't know what's going on.
But you were
going
to pay them, right?
I was going to pay them.
Yeah, like $2.
And I was like, but mum, but Jem. But mum. But I was like, but that's how I, you know, like I used to, I mean, that's how me and my mates, like the kids in my neighborhood, we would like wash cars, weed gardens, you know, you'd go around in school holidays and that's how you'd make pocket money. And so I was like saying to Jem, you are out of your mind. Like that is not an unusual request. I wouldn't be offended if someone sent me a text asking. And so we go out for dinner with VK and his wife and I'm like, so, you know, would it be a hassle if like the boys came over and weeded the garden? And Vaughn's like, oh, mate, you can't ask that. And I'm like, what?
They said it as well. Yeah.
And he was like, because you've got to take into account, like it's not just a case of the boys coming over. I have to make sure they get over. And then, you know, you got to make sure that the boys actually sort of, you know, that they're not going to get distracted. Is the garden safe?
You've got some brown snakes or something.
Yeah, are there snakes or anything? It's not just as simple as, and I was like, yeah, but when we were kids, and he's like, yeah, but when we were kids, like parents would fucking give you cigarettes.
Oh, yeah,
like,
seriously.
Sips the beer and stuff. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you're right.
I feel like I'm on the seesaw with this one because when you first mentioned it, I went, oh, really, Charlie? Come on. But then we did the same thing. Yeah, we washed the cars. We mowed the lawns. It's like we got a bit of pocket money. So, but it was generally our parents. Like we weren't, mum wasn't hiring me out to the neighborhood. It would have been weird as well. Like white mum just hiring out her little POC kid. Do you need anyone
to
come to
genuinely your kids? Sure, they're mine.
Yeah. How much work do you need? Yeah. How many hours? Yeah. They're good for it.
Good for they're good for sneakers. It.
Yeah. I don't know. If I'm going to have to pick a side, I'm going to say, no, you're a psycho. That's crazy. You shouldn't be asking your friends to.
So how do kids, like the big job that the big money earner, the top dollar job that my sister and I did when we were kids was there was a golf course not far from our house.
Oh, yeah.
And so we would go and find lost golf balls, like fish them out of the lake, dig them out of the long grass.
Oh, with the alligators.
Clean them up and then sell them to golfers, and it was surprisingly lucrative. Like if it was a sort of damaged, you'd sell it for like 20 cents, 50 cents. If it was good condition, you'd sell it for like a dollar. But I remember I'd be coming away from a day on the golf course with 20, 30 bucks for like, you know, an 8-year-old. That's heaps of money.
Yeah.
But then I think, definitely golfers were just like, this kid needs, like, you know, clearly there's something wrong. Like, we should, you know, give him some money.
Yeah.
But I also think, too, that we were would have been fucking annoying. We weren't paying to get onto the golf course. We were just jumping the fence.
Yeah,
like,
no.
And dangerous. Yeah. Like, eight-year-olds running across fairways when people are, like, hitting balls.
And golf clubs can be a bit exclusive, so they'll probably like, what are these kids doing in the ponds? Oh,
it was a public golf club. Right, it wasn't okay. One of your golf
clubs. Oh, no, come on. I don't golf. I know that I'm sure you've been getting into it up here in Byron. It's very in at the moment.
I have not golfed in years. I've got to sound like I completely misrepresent myself. I don't do any sport at all. I just wear sporting attire. The problem for me with any sport that is two-handed, like golf or cricket, is I'm a left-hander naturally, like single-handed thing, I'm left.
Yeah.
But for some reason with two-handed sports, I play right-handed.
Oh, that's all wrong.
Yeah, and it's all wrong. And I don't know how that got implanted in my head. I think it's maybe because all the coaches I had were probably right-handed, so when they were showing me how to...
My mum's a lefty, and she just got smashed for it when she was a kid. Like, actually...
Was that back in the day when they'd train you to use your right?
Yeah, like they'd smack her hand with a ruler and... Mum. Oh. So you never had that at school, though?
No, thankfully.
Wait, what year were you born?
1901.
Okay, yeah, great. And you didn't have it back then?
No, they definitely, like, catered, but it was just... I think it was because I got, like, guitar lessons as a kid, and that was, I mean...
Did you play it backwards?
Well, I don't know. I don't... Oh, right. I picked up the ukulele about 6 months ago, and I play it like a right-hander, and it's funny because I'm sort of getting better at it, but the better I'm getting at it and the more complex, like, you know, the combos are and the chords I'm trying to play, the harder it is to coordinate. And then I realize it's, well, I mean, you play a bit of guitar, so tell me, like, for me... My dominant hand working the fret makes more sense to me because I feel like that's where I need more control, is like holding the strings and making shapes.
Yeah.
But my less dominant hand, which is doing the strumming, it's really uncoordinated. So when I'm trying to sort of like strum a particular pattern, it's like I find it's really, really hard.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like maybe it's just because it's the way I was shown from the start that it feels really natural. But Jimi Hendrix, his whole thing was that he was – right-handed, and he played the fret with his right hand. He played backwards.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So that's like me. So basically, I'm the Jimi Hendrix of ukuleles.
Yeah. I was trying to tell you that you're Jimi Hendrix. Yeah. No, but it's this weird thing. Like, I remember growing up as well and surfing and hitting, like, maybe when I was early teens, hitting this point where my brain kind of got confused with how I wanted to take off because I've never been goofy. But
sorry, which one is goofy? Left foot forward.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, No, sorry. Goofy's right foot forward.
Okay.
Yeah. So whatever. Yeah, it's the opposite to what you're thinking.
Okay. And so is Goofy – what's the other one? So it's Goofy and
just,
natural.
Just, yeah.
Orthodox. So is the idea that if you – that left – people who are left dominant surf Goofy?
No, it doesn't really fall into – like, about left, right. It's not like left, right like that, yeah.
I'm just trying to think like I don't surf, but I would go right foot forward, so that's natural?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, you'd be Goofy.
I'm goofy as fuck. I am Goofy.
Yeah, you're super Goofy, yeah.
Goofy AF.
Yeah. But I think it's still a weird one. Like your brain, it's interesting how you kind of fall into that, right? I'm sure there's hereditary things as well, but then then you get trained and well,
It's funny with the cricket thing because I was a batsman in high school, not very good, but you know, I was a batsman and was okay at that, even though I was playing as a right-hander, left-hander. So because the general wisdom is that you want your dominant hand the lower because that's where the power is coming from.
Yeah.
But then I can't remember, there's a famous cricketer, I think he's an Australian cricketer, who is like me where he's left but that's right. And his whole thing is, no, you actually want your dominant hand to guide the shot because it's more about finesse.
Mm.
Because, there's certain shots in cricket where you want power, you want to drive it back, you know, over the fence. But a lot of it is about angling the blade, footwork, deflection, all that kind of stuff.
Wow, the cricket expert over here.
Not at all. Yeah. Not at all. But I just
12th man.
It was just the one moment where I was like, I could have been a world champion if I'd been taught how to bat like left-hander.
It's never too late. No, actually.
It is too late.
No, it's not.
In some instances, it is definitely
too late. I feel like cricket is one of those ones, and this isn't disrespecting anyone. If you're a cricket player, I love it. Also, my wife hates it. There's 21 days of the year where I make her watch Test match cricket.
Oh my God, you make her watch?
Well, I don't make her watch, but it's on the TV. It's on the TV. Yeah. It's a very good pastime of mine. But it's one sport where I feel like you could probably rock in and maybe give it a go at your 40s. It just depends on your... How's your handball? No, you may... Yeah, probably not. Yeah, it's not.
Darts, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, darts.
Tenpin bowling, definitely.
Yeah.
No, but cricket, like, I think... No, cricket is definitely like a skill... Like a skillful...
I'm talking it down so much. Imagine having a ball come at you at 150 Ks.
It's like you're fucking insane. What are you talking about? Like, it requires incredible... Maybe like, I'm trying to gin myself reflexes. Up
that I can make the Australian cricket team. You
right,
know.
What would you be?
I don't know. Probably fast really... Bowler? No, I was going to say really average. I'd want to be an all-rounder, you know, but I'm not good at either, so I guess.
Well, what would you... But you'd want to be an... But what, where do you naturally fall? Are you a bowler or a batsman?
Yeah, I'm a bowler that wants to be a batsman. I feel like that's the same
medium,
as like...
Are you medium pace bowler? That was me. It's like, you're fucking useless. Who wants medium pace?
No.
Like, learn to spin or be fast.
Yeah, medium, totally.
It's like when Mark Waugh used to bowl and it's like, oh, he's going to be medium pace. What's the fucking point?
Oh, right. Cool. He's coming in at 105. What is with no spin? Yeah.
The ball's not going to move and it's going to... the ball's not going to spin. It's going to move fairly slightly.
Yeah. I was Mark Waugh without the batting and the playing for Australia. Just the medium
and
pace.
And placing bets on yourself.
Yeah, basically. And without the twin brother. I mean, that would be crazy if Mum told me that this whole time I had a twin brother, but
he was a first class cricketer.
Well, no, I was going to say he got lost on one of the routes when she sent us out to work when we were kids. Now it all makes sense.
He's been weeding gardens and washing cars for the last 30 years.
Oh, wow. If you're out there, just know that I love you and I'm here with open arms whenever you want to come home.
I've always thought it would be nice to have a twin.
Yeah.
Just to not like for the companionship, but just it's like you could try shit out on them first to see how it looks on you. Like you're thinking about a new haircut or maybe like just a different look with your outfits and stuff. Just get the twin to do it.
Would you want to be older or younger?
Doesn't matter, does it?
Do you think it matters? Oh, it matters. There's hierarchy.
To the twins?
Yeah. Well, that's what you're saying you want to be a twin.
Yeah, but I don't... I mean, look, I think me and my twin, are we identical?
You are, yeah.
Older. If we're identical, I want to be older.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Mm.
Do we have the same temperament? Do we hang out? We friends?
Your friends, different temperament. Okay. But you can feel each other's emotions.
He's more introverted and a bit like... Not, you know, he's kind of, he doesn't like to joke around. He's a bit more serious, contemplative.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
Right.
But also a writer.
So do we hang out? Like, so, you know, you come over and he would want to pop over and see you as well?
Yeah. And he's dating Jem's sister.
He's dating Jem. I'm like, what the son of a bitch?
No. He did date Jem. No. Okay. That's getting too complicated. He's dating Jem's sister though. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. So we are, so what you're saying is like we are living parallel lives in the sense that, you know, he has Jem's sister, let's say for argument's sake, is like a year or two younger than her. So it's virtually the same thing. But it's just that in every way that I'm like me, he is the opposite.
Yeah.
So he didn't go into a career in like the performing arts. It's sort of he can be a writer, but it's more technical or something like that.
Yeah, definitely.
He's not a public speaker. He doesn't do podcasts.
No, he works more for it. He's actually in a news publication. Like he's a
finance editor, something like that.
For the
Australian Financial Review. And his politics are quite conservative.
Yeah.
What's
his star sign? Well, it'd be the same as yours. Yeah.
Fucking idiot. It's my identical twin.
That's right. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Let's just say that maybe he's like half a centimetre taller than me. I think I'm 178. Let's say he's 179 or something like that.
Yeah. And it's always grinding gears.
Yeah, but he never changes his look. My look changes. I have beards, long, short hair, whatever. But he's always been clean shaven, short back and sides. Mm-hmm. He's a real straight shooter.
But the thing that you always find hard is that he's always been your mum's favourite.
Oh.
Yeah. So it was always like, what's his name? Actually, yeah.
Oh, well, okay. Well, Mum, the names that were floated before they arrived at Charles was
Rachel,
Oliver.
Okay, yeah, close.
Oliver and Andrew.
Oh, okay.
So let's say he's Ollie.
Yeah, he's Ollie. No, he's definitely Ollie.
Charlie and Ollie Clawson.
Yeah.
Do you know Charlie and Ollie?
Yeah, and Ollie's a legend. He's just...
Wait a minute. He's the opposite of me, so he wouldn't be a legend.
No, he is.
I'm the legend.
No, he's just such a knockabout guy, you know.
Everyone wants to hang out with Ollie.
Yeah, and he just knows so much about finance. He's always giving, you know, he's always giving the
Did you go to school with any twins? Were there any twins in your year level?
There were. Yeah, there were twins of mine. And they were kind of interesting. They weren't identical.
Yeah, same.
But they kind of like weirdly didn't get along, but then also always had each other's back.
That's exactly the guys that were the twins of my year level that weren't identical. They had their own separate friends, but were at the same time, like they were
so tight.
So tight. It was actually the perfect arrangement because they didn't tread on each other's toes. Because they weren't identical, they weren't often compared. I think they even played like different sports. Yeah. So like they weren't competing for the same. So I know you don't follow AFL, but there are two twins at the moment called the King Brothers.
Yeah, yeah. One what about the Selwoods? Come on. I know a bit about
They're not twins, though. They're just brothers. Okay. This is a big family. But the twin boy, the King Brothers. So one plays for Gold Coast, one plays for St Kilda. Right. And they are identical twins. And they're both like gun, like, you know, top 10 draft picks, 201 centimetres, key position forwards. Now, Max, who plays for St Kilda, was taken at pick 4.
Yeah.
Ben was taken at pick 6, I think, or pick 8.
Ooh.
And so Max always had the kind of like the reputation of being like, you know, he's the gun.
Yeah, yeah.
But his career started a bit slower than Ben because he had a knee injury. Ben goes up to the Gold Coast, which is obviously like a basket case.
Mm.
But despite all of that, starts his career like a house on fire, just kicks multiple goals, was drafted as a defender, but they threw him forward and it turns out he's an amazing forward. The Gold Coast, because they lose players every year because no one wants to play for them.
Yeah.
They offered him like a fucking huge contract after his first year, like signed him up for like 4 years. And the discussion has always been around, will Ben come back to Melbourne and play for St Kilda with his brother Max, because they both grew up barracking for St Kilda.
That'd be cool.
And that's the kind of like fairy tale. Of course, like the two brothers who had each other's backs growing up and they were both St Kilda supporters. They both had Nick Riewoldt's number on their back growing up.
Yeah.
They're both going to play for St Kilda. And all the Saints fans are like, oh, that'd be amazing. But I'm like, if I'm Ben King, I'm like, that's a fucking no-win situation. He's already on the Gold Coast.
Killing it.
Killing it, making big money. I mean, he's done his knee. He's out for the year. So this year he won't be killing it. But his contract's up at the end of this year and he's going to have every club trying to get him. The idea that you would go, like he's identical to his brother. They're both playing the same position. Like, can you imagine arriving at the Saints where like, you know, this is your brother and I know you love him and you got each other's backs, but you're going to be compared all the time. Like it happens even when you're not twins, when you're the Selwood brothers or your brothers in a sport is people like you got the same surname. So we're going to compare the two of you. And like Max signed like a 5 or 6 year, some monster contract last year. Like, how's that going to be? Like when you're sitting down at the dinner table, like you're going to know how much each other are getting paid, unless the Saints are willing to go, right, we're going to pay you both monster contracts, which to me makes no sense at all when you've got like other players you have to pay as well.
That's going to be so hard. Pardon me. I've just got,
you're getting emotional thinking about the King boys.
I just don't know what Ben should do. Now you've laid it all out for me. He should go back to St Kilda.
But you would get what I'm saying?
I do.
Like, with that's a lot of kind of pressure, like, that you don't need. Like, he's going to get top dollar no matter where he goes. But it's only if he goes to St Kilda that people will compare him to – well, they're going to always compare him to his brother, but it's going to be more intense when they're playing in the same side, especially as they're playing in the same position.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like
so I'm starting to GoFundMe for Ben.
Yeah. But I just I feel like you've got sidetracked from the conversation about you and Ollie, because I don't know. Are you trying to say Ollie is Ben, and he?
No. Well, no, because they're very similar. Oh, look, I don't know. I don't know them personally, but to me, the King brothers seem to be quite similar. I mean, they're both they're both footballers and they play in the same position.
Wow, sounds like you're pigeonholing them pretty hard.
But they're elite. The point being, they're elite athletes. I thought the hypothetical about Ollie was he was meant to be my direct opposite.
No, you're right. You're right. Well, talking about opposites, I had a best mate at school when we were in year 8, and we did everything together. We went to Hoyts on the weekend.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Hey, come on. I watch all the MA 15 plus, snuck into those. And no, we were best mates. And it must have been about, it was something crazy, like maybe 2 years
Vin
into
Diesel's
our friendship.
Awesome.
Yeah. Vin Diesel's the best. He's just so butch. There must have been like 2 years into our friendship. And then I found out he had a twin sister. Like I knew his sister was his sister, but I never realized they were twins.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a weird, it changed the friendship a little bit. I was like, why?
Yuck.
Yeah.
You were like,
No.
You were once one egg and you split into two.
I felt lied to, you know what I mean? Like he'd never told, I knew it was his sister, but I don't know why he was so ashamed to say that they were twins.
I have a friend that's a similar thing where I had met his sister like for years and then only twigged about 5 or 6 years into it that they were twins. He never introduced her as my twin sister. She's always, this is my sister.
But then it comes back to the competitiveness and like, you know, all the things that you do everything together, you know.
So you want to stand on your own.
Yeah, you share a birthday. Actually, I have another friend who is 2 years older than his sister and they're born on the exact same day. So he had every milestone before her.
Right.
That would suck, right?
I guess, would it?
Yeah. Why? For the younger. Yeah, it's got to be hard.
Why would it suck for the younger one?
Because your older sibling hits every milestone before you, so
but that's going to happen regardless of the same birthday or not.
Yeah, but it's on the same day as your birthday, so you share it. So every time they're celebrating, yeah. Actually, now I'm saying it out loud. Yeah, it's kind of a dumb.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe just keep that one tucked away for the next time we get you back on the show.
Yay, great. And this is what happens when we delete the first episode.
We didn't delete it. It was unlistenable.
As well have deleted it.
No, we've done that. We've done a great job to get this far through it. I actually didn't think about the twin thing being a female, though. That would actually be interesting as well. Like if I had a twin sister, because that, in a lot of ways, if you take a very binary view of it, would be the direct opposite. If Ollie was like, if she was Olivia,
yeah,
then she would be, you know, kind of opposite to me in almost every way. So I wonder what Olivia's like.
But she could still be really similar, but the female version of you.
But would that be similar? Would the female version of me be? Are you talking in terms of personality and interest and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. I don't know.
I'm always suspicious when I meet siblings who are like best mates. Like, have you ever met those, like, you know, the siblings who are just like, you know, maybe a couple of years between them, but they're really good mates. They hang out together and they go to parties and stuff.
Like me and my sister.
Oh, yeah. It's true. You guys are best mates. But you don't hang out all the time.
Well, no, she lives in another country.
Yeah,
even
prior to that, like you do include her in things, but it's not like every time I saw you guys, you were together.
Yeah, no.
She's in your friendship group, but I wouldn't say that you guys are like all the time hanging out. No. I'm talking about like there's
the people that do everything, the siblings that do everything together.
Yeah. I'm always get kind of just, I don't know, maybe it's just my fucked up family, but it's like my family is kind of close, but at the same time very separate or very individual at the same time. We don't like just hang together, like, hey, come around and watch a movie or something.
Are there out of all the siblings, do you have
favorites?
No, I'm not going to ask that. I'm going to say, is there like a small portion of them that hang out with each other the most kind of thing?
I think so. Like, there's sort of aligned interests and stuff, and also they're spread out all over Australia, so the ones who are in the same state tend to be the ones who catch up. But it's weird. Like I always sort of grow when you come from a big family like mine, when there's like 9 siblings, it's almost like there's tiers to the family. Because the eldest kids, like my eldest sister is 18 years older than me. She's old enough to be my mother. Mm. Like, you know, so we're not hanging out. Like there's not really a lot. But having said that, we have hung out.
Of course.
But I think it's more like my brother Matthew, who is 14 years older than me, we were both living in Sydney. And so we would hang out all the time. And he is actually like, you know, Asker, he is a sibling that would come around and hang out, would go see movies or just come around to watch a movie or something like that.
I know Matthew the best out of all your siblings. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So he's the second eldest second eldest in the family. So there's kind of like less of a reason. But then when I was little, Lucy, who's the one above me, we were best friends. So I think it just kind of like changes as you get. I mean, you only ever had Asker, so you've got no choice. She has to be your best friend.
Yeah, and trust me. Whereas
I can pick or choose.
Yeah, we weren't always best friends. I was that little shitbag brother. Oh, my God, yeah. There was she used to be able to do this thing where she could disable the door. Like, I don't know why she'd have to. I think it says a lot about me. Where she'd run to the room and she could just take the doorknob off so I couldn't get in there. And I'd be smashing on the other side, you know.
Well, I sympathize with her.
Yeah. But she used to really get annoyed because it must have been when she was about 12 and I was a bit of a man child. People would always think that we were boyfriend and girlfriend. It was really weird.
Me and my brother, Matthew, went out for lunch.
Oh, no.
In Paddington. And a guy came over. In this cafe we were eating at, they had this thing where they would took Polaroids of the customers and put them on the wall.
Mm.
And the guy was like, let's get a photo of you. And he's like, you two are so cute together. How long have you been going out? And I'm like, this is my brother. This is my brother. Oh. And I'm going to pretend that this conversation has never happened.
Yeah. Leave the table right there. Yeah, no, it was never that bad. She would always, I see it still get her now when people say, oh my God, I didn't realize that you're the older sister, that one I can see.
Oh, that bothers her?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I think it's just maybe because she knows my maturity levels and me as a human is like, are you serious? This guy?
Yeah.
But I think it says a lot about me, you know, to strangers. That's,
did you ever have like, I mean, maybe she's not old enough, but like I was talking to Gemma about this the other day with her little brother who's 7 years younger than her.
Mm.
Because their dad wasn't around, like he looked up to her boyfriends. And I remember when I was, because my dad wasn't around, I really like would cling on to like my sister Miranda would start dating a guy and then I would cling on. Was it the same with you?
Totally. And my sister has one of these annoying things where she's always dated really nice guys. Like they're just awesome.
What an idiot.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. But I'd always like, it was like a breakup for me every time. She'd be like, I'm not dating them anymore. I'm back. Fuck.
It's just consoling you. It's my big bro.
Yeah. He was like, oh my God. It was part of the family. Like, what are you doing?
You're writing breakup apology.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. Like, I'm sure we'll meet again. We'll meet again at another point. We can still be mates. No, because she was 4 years older than me, it also was when she finished school. Or my first year of high school was all the guys in her year that were in year 12.
Right.
And they were so nice to me. Like everyone, it was like, oh, yeah, ask his brother. Yeah, ask his brother. I was like,
you're a made man.
So, yeah, I came into like first year of high school. And I had some cred. I was like, okay, cool, yeah. And that quickly changed. But she definitely had lots of boyfriends that took me under their wing and taught me to surf and let me drive their cars and did all the things. So yeah, I got pretty heartbroken. I'd say to her, like, she'd start dating a new person, I'd be like, don't do it to me. Like, I can't, I don't know if I can go into this. Thankfully, she's in a happy long-term relationship now and I have a brother-in-law. But you know, that could change. I'm joking, Simon, I'm joking. But you never know.
You never know. It's funny though, because that's what I was saying to Gemma about, like, my sister's boyfriends is that, because, you know, I didn't really, especially when it's that kind of early teen period, when you start like hit puberty and shit, and it's like this stuff that your mum can't help you with, like, how do I fucking shave? What's going on with my body right now? Like, all the shit's going on. And like, my mum was very cool and I could talk to her about anything, but there's stuff that she didn't know. And I remember, like, as soon as my, and my sister was very like patient and very accommodating, like with the way I would monopolize, like, you know, her boyfriend would come around and they'd be like, you know, and then got a footy in my hand or whatever it is and wanted to hang out. But I think it was just like one of those, I was saying to Jim, like, I don't think I ever had like a father figure, you know, because mum never remarried or anything like that. But I think what I did in my life from that point on was I was kind of like taking little bits of fatherly guidance from older men for the rest of, like, you know, until I became an adult myself.
It's just
like,
totally.
You know, well, you're not a father figure and I'm not going to come to you for everything, but it's like, okay, well, this is how you do this. Or like, I remember, you know, the first time I had my heart broken when I was 16 or something like that, talking to my sister's boyfriend.
Yeah.
And he was just like, ugh. You know, like he didn't want to be consoling this little fucking dipshit, you know? And he's like, yeah, mate, there's like plenty more fish in the sea. But I
love her. She said that she was,
you. And he's like, all right, mate, all right. Okay. And it was just like, but it's kind of, it's funny. It's like, I think that's the way I sort of constructed my male identity, or, you know, the guy that I was going to become, was just like sort of like picking and choosing with all these dudes.
Yeah, totally. I feel like I had the same thing. Like, I had my grandfather there as like a really strong father figure, and I considered him a father, but he didn't live with us, and he wasn't even that, like, he wasn't close in distance proximity. So it was my friends' dads and the kind of the men in my life, and some of those were, yeah, my sister's boyfriends and things as well. But you end up grabbing all these bits to kind of form your own.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a patchwork. It's like Frankenstein.
Yeah, totally. Like, which is really interesting now than becoming fathers ourselves and then realizing not just the responsibility, but like how you can be that.
You are the template for men, for your daughter.
Yeah.
Like how you treat your wife, how you treat her.
Yeah.
You know, I'm acutely aware of that all the time, is like, you know, you are, her understanding of male energy and male interaction is all going to be, and Jem is actually
so important.
And Jem pulls me up on it all the time, because I have a tendency to sort of fly off the handle over minor things. And she's always like, don't, because I think about my dad, and that's what he was kind of like, was, you know, he was a good dad and stuff, but he was an anxious man and he was very wound up. And my memory of him was being, you know, very pissed off all the time and coiled up and just shitty. And, you know, he had fucking 9 kids and he fucking hated his job and life life was hard, you know, and sucked. And so I think, you know, he wasn't always kind of cognizant of what he's giving up. At the same time, he was a loving dad and, you know, he took me to lots of different things and I have great memories of him. But there are moments now that I'm a dad where I can see elements of what I learned coming out, like those elements of, you know, you fucking lose a podcast. And so you're like, fuck, shit, fuck, you know, and it's like, it's
well, fine. I feel like that was me. You were way more chilled.
But there is elements of that. And I think it does come down to that, you know, there's a responsibility. Like, if we didn't have a kid, I probably would just fly off the handle all the time. But there is a responsibility now that there's a little pair of eyes and ears that are monitoring everything that you're saying. And even with like swearing, because I swear a lot.
Yeah.
And she's like picking that up. Like, she's repeated a few swear words back to me, like the second after I've said it. Yeah. You know, shit. And I'm like, oh. That's a bad word.
I think the bump's close as well. I was like, oh, no. Oh, no. Like, we really got to rein it in soon.
But I fucking love you.
I thought she said fuck up the other day. I was like, I wanted to cuddle her. I was stoked, but also was like, maybe I should rein it in a little bit. But no, it is something that I'm so conscious of, is that responsibility. But also just being, it's made me so mindful of so many things. I don't know. I've always wanted to be a dad. I look forward to being a father so much. And now that I have it, I never imagined it to be like this. But what I always did know is that I wanted to give Chi the best I could, and whatever child I was going to have, you know, and do the things that I didn't necessarily get to do or have as a kid.
Well, that's what becoming a parent is kind of like, right? It's a chance to undo all the shit that you feel like.
Or redo if you're a real piece of shit.
A real piece of shit. But I agree. Like, I think it's sort of, you know, whatever gripes you had about the way your parents raised you, or the things that you feel like you didn't want, you missed out on, you just become acutely aware. Yeah. I mean, it works both ways. There are certain things that my mum and my dad did amazingly, which I'm like, that's what I want that for her.
Yeah.
But then also the stuff that you feel like fell short, you're like, well, I don't want
to. Totally. And there's definitely, there is the other side to it as well, because there are times where now stepping into being a parent where I'm like, oh my God, fuck, my mum was amazing.
Yeah.
I've called her up out of the blue before and just been like, I love you. Thank you. She's like, what? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Not that I don't say it all the time, but just out of the blue of being like, what's this about? Yeah. And I was just like, thank you for everything that you did, like for showing up every day, cooking me meals when I was a kid and being a little shitbag. Like you just do it so selflessly and effortlessly as a parent so many times, you know?
Yeah.
It's really special. So now we've got a huge responsibility, Charlie, to be amazing dads.
Yeah. Oh, easy, mate. Easy. As long as I just don't fly off the handle from fucking up podcast recordings.
You are recording this, aren't you? A good point as any
to leave this tie. Thank you for, I mean, it's been a two-hour session now. Hopefully I can recover this other podcast and release it at a later date. But if we didn't, I think we did a pretty good second episode.
Yeah,
I reckon it was a good dress rehearsal. And I look forward to meeting my twin sister, Olivia, at a later date. And your long-lost twin brother who's still out weeding guards.
Yeah, we don't know his name, but yeah, we'll get back to you on that.
I should also let people know that Two Guys, One Cup is exclusively moving to the Listener app. So if you're a fan of our football podcast, you can now find that on the Listener app. You just download the app and search Two Guys, One Cup. You'll find it there. New TOEFOP is out tomorrow. I got to say, it's a bit heavy for the first half. Not heavy. It's just I'm in the midst of talking about flood relief and volunteer work, and I do get a bit emotional at some point. So apologies for that. If it's going to be triggering for you, you know, maybe fast forward or don't listen to it. But I think, you know, if you want to know what's going up here, because some shit is going down, it's worth listening to. And if you want to know anything else about the show, go to TOEFOP.com. If you want to support us, you can go to Patreon.com/TOEFOP. But for now, I'm Charlie Clawson.
I'm Ty Hara.
For the second time.